I'm Maria Menounos, and you're tuned in to AfterBuzz TV, the ESPN of TV talk. Now, let the buzz begin.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, it is the AfterBuzz TV AEW Double or Nothing After Show, and have we got a show for you. But before we get started and all the shenanigans, hijinks, and flim-flam, let me introduce to you the amazing people I get to work with today. First up, he is the enforcer of the AfterBuzz TV After Show crew. Let's hear it for Josh Alonso.
Oh, how we doing, guys? How we doing? Can't wait to talk about this pay-per-view. Super, super excited about this.
I'm pumped. And also, we have the face of WWE Raw After Buzz Wrestling and NXT After Buzz Wrestling. Let's hear it for Flo Bo Boyce.
Do go on. It's been a couple of weeks that we all hung out together, but we're having the best time ever. It's Double or Nothing, and I'm winning.
I love it. And, of course, I am your benevolent host. They call me Fancy Jack Farmer, and we have such a packed show for you guys. We don't even have time for an Elite of the Week. We don't even have time for a runway. We got to get right into it. So let's do just that. Folks, Flobo, what did you think of the show overall?
Double or Nothing is one of the bigger shows of the year, whether you like it or not. And I found that to be very refreshing, how I'm able to make a big show happen with no one really in the stands who bought a ticket. So I was impressed of how each match meant something. Each one can lead to other storylines. Not a filler in that AEW show, but definitely that's main event will stand on its own for a long time to come.
Yeah, Josh, this show, we've seen a lot of these empty arena shows, and we've seen a lot of, you know, pay-per-views and things in the empty arena era. This one just felt bigger to me for some reason. Am I crazy? What did you think of the show?
Overall, you just really don't miss a crowd. Like, you are just sucked in so much of the spectacle that's going on, especially with AEW, the way they're presenting the shows. You almost forget that there is no crowd. You're just sucked in so much by not only the athleticism, but the storylines and the characters overall. I mean, it's just an amazing show.
Well, this, the set to me and the vibe to me actually had kind of Halloween Havoc vibes to me. And what I mean is the fact that the set, even though it was smaller than I think a major arena, it still felt big. It still felt part of the show with the big cards right there up against the ring with the big jackpot machine spinning throughout the night. I really, really loved it. I also really enjoyed all the hype videos and things. I wanted to say, though, to start off, I really appreciate it. And this is going to come off as a bit of a downer, but I like that they address Shad and Hana Kamara and the very early passing of both of them and kind of opening up a conversation about some of the stuff that's happened on social media that led to at least Kamara's early passing. But did you guys have any thoughts on that? I guess I'll let you guys speak to that if you guys want to.
I mean, what Excalibur said wasn't actually the most eloquent way of saying it, but he was right. And a lot of times, if we're not good to each other, things happen. On one of our sister shows, AfterBuzz TV's Women Pro Wrestling Weekly, Kimura was actually one of our stars of the week, where we had a profile about her career. So we had a bit of a connection there as far as educating our audiences about the things she did in Stardom and the Tokyo Cyber Squad and that group she was part of. So it's a tragic passing, and I hope the best for her family and those who survived by her.
I couldn't have said it any better myself. I mean, yeah, just pretty much that. Whatever Flobo said, take it as truth. Yeah.
Agreed. It's very easy to be mean to people, but I think it's the good thing is to be good to people, and it's not that tough. So let's get into the fun stuff, though. Let's talk about this main event. Let's talk about the Stadium Stampede match. And much like a lot of these cinematic matches, we had no idea what to expect going into it. I, for one, found it to be an amazing, fun time. If you know me and you know my sensibilities, you probably already knew I loved this match. Mixed reviews online, though. Let's start with you, Josh. As far as cinematic matches go, did this work?
In comparison to what WWE does, it kind of like faltered a little bit, but the way the story was told and throughout the cuts of each of the different matches through going out throughout the stadium, it was great. Overall, I got to say the MVP of this match, I had to say, is Matt Hardy, because we got to see not only one,
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Not only two, but three of his personas. And I think that was the most amazing thing ever, especially when we saw his, what is it, the matter of facts? Perfect.
That was a really, really fun part of the show. Flobo,
yeah.
Now we've seen a lot of these, and I know we've talked about a lot of these cinematic matches between the Boneyard match and the Money in the Bank match, and now we've got this Stadium Stampede match. Where do you think this ranks? Was this one of the best? Was this one of the worst? Was it a miss? Was it a hit? Where do you think it fits with all those?
The short answer is the middle. And it is going to sound pretty ironic.
Very safe.
Yeah, exactly. The beige alert. it's going to sound pretty ironic with a show that actually had a casino ladder match. But this Stadium Stampede reminded me so much of Money in the Bank. From a month ago, we had a little bit of an extended presentation of what the rules were. We had a bunch of comedy spots. Can I say the word spots in this show? Too late. I did it twice. And it was all entertaining. I thought it was pretty cool. And it was interesting that they decided, AEW decided to pump in the crowd noise from the arena into most of those matches as well to give it more of a bigger feel. I personally do feel the Boneyard match was in a class of itself because we didn't know what to expect at all going in, whereas Stadium Stampede kind of tells us what's on the tin. But I think I'm in the middle, leaning towards positive, if I have to, you know, pick a side. I don't know.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that because I felt the same way about the Boneyard match. It's almost unfair to count that one because it was the first, and it's kind of it kind of caught us off guard. And so I don't know if I can really count that. That aside, personally, this was my favorite of all the cinematic matches I've seen so far because it did have a little bit of everything. Something it did that I thought was really cool, just breaking it down, is it seemed like it had different sections of the match. So it started off with the opening, and Jericho's music instantly pumped me up for this match. I don't know about you guys, but I was singing along as if I was there in the arena, and I love that they had matching kits to go with it. And just visually, it was very easy to tell who was on whose team, by the way, when they were all scuffling throughout. But they had the opening, and then they had sort of the Matt Hardy segment, and then they had what I call the shootout in the saloon segment, and then they had the making fun of football segment before closing it all out. Let's break those down real quick. The Hardy transformation, Ortiz, Santana, Omega and Hardy. I got to say, first and foremost with this, before we start heaping a boatload of praise onto Matt Hardy, I think Ortiz is underrated as an MVP character. I'm saying I can't swim before getting in the little pool. What did you think of this section of the match? Josh, you should talk about it a little bit, but Flo, I want to hear your opinion on these guys and what they did.
You hit the nail on the head. Ortiz and Santana, they are proud, they are powerful, and we've seen a lot of their older promos saying, hey, we're tough, we're from New York, we're entertaining your balls off. That was our whole thing. That's great. but they made comedy work in a way that was believable. It wasn't them just, like, they took a pie in the face, but they took the pie in the face in a way that was very consistent with their characters, which is something that a lot of promotions tend to not do. They tend to, like, work for the spot. Everything seems to be character motivated, which makes it that much better for these guys.
Yeah, Josh, what I thought was interesting is Proud and Powerful basically murdered Matt Hardy, and we're about to walk away with him face down in the water. Was that something we're supposed to just forget, that they thought they killed somebody and we're just okay with it?
Honestly, what I thought was going to happen, as soon as I saw the wheelchair and the duct tape, I'm like, oh no. And I saw the pool, I'm just like, instant dots and connecting. I'm just like, oh no, are we going to actually see an actual snuff film happening? Because if so, this is where I draw the line.
We'll see you next month for All Out.
But when you see him dunking into the pool and everything, instantly me thinking, I'm just like, okay, this is going to be the lake reincarnation spot right here. But instead of actually being a lake, it's going to be a pool. And then I was kind of excited to see what iterations of Matt Hardy we saw. We saw Damascus. We saw, I guess you could say, two extreme Matt Hardy. And then when I saw version one Matt Hardy, I'm pretty sure I could speak for all of us here. Super exciting to see that, especially with seeing the little factoids in the bottom right there. And I believe he said that he can hold his breath for about, what, 348 seconds or so, give or take?
Yeah. It was fun, and it was a good way to sort of play with those things and the different characters, and let Matt Hardy be that broken character he is. I love the little spot, by the way, of throwing Santana into the ice and saying, that will help with your inflammation. but shifting to that, this was my favorite part of the night, the shootout in the saloon. Hangman Adam Page, I'm going to confess something to you guys. Well, Flobo, you already know this. As AEW was getting going and they were building up to a Hangman Adam Page versus Chris Jericho title match, I was not on board with Hangman Adam Page. I was like, I don't get it. This guy is not the star they think he is. They have made me such a believer in Hangman Adam Page. That was one of the coolest things I have ever seen in wrestling. The horse was fun. Don't get me wrong. It's funny he went to a bar. Don't get me wrong. But the whole scene starting with Jake Hager walking in and Hangman just sitting there saying, are you here to fight or are you here to drink? And then pouring the drink and then taking a drink first and him running him over the bar. It was the best fight scene, in my opinion, of this whole thing. Flobo, are you a believer in Hangman Adam Page?
I was always a believer in Hangman Page, but I will agree with you, Jack, that run for the AEW title made me go, I don't know. But I mean, the moment when we were all told to stay inside our homes, to stay safe and stay healthy, and Adam Page did a video about him at home with the Dynamite theme and the colored like fireworks going around while he's like playing on his PlayStation. I was like, this guy knows it. Timing is on point. The character motivations are on point. I do like the fact that you had Hager just saying like, I'm not gonna fall for this, end up being the guy taking the fall anyway. So to me, I think I made a point for everyone. I think coming out of this, I'm not sure how long the Omega Hangman Page tag team is gonna run, but if they were to break off sooner than later, I can see Hangman Page now being a star or being a single star.
So yeah, they had, by the way, Hager to me felt like he took a big L when he lost to Moxley a few weeks ago, but he took a bottle of the face and shrugged it off before taking on both the tag team champions, before eating a assisted buckshot lariat over the bar. Josh, is Hager a monster we expected him to be? Did this build him up even though he kind of ended up knocked out over the side of the railing?
I think he hit the nail on the head. I mean, when he took that loss to Moxley, it kind of just deflated his stock a little bit. And then seeing him being beat up at the bar kind of dipped it a little bit, but the only saving grace is it took two guys to take him out, not just one, not just Adam Page.
Hangman and Omega. Yeah.
Not just Adam Page himself, but it actually took Omega just to come along with him, just to double team on him. And I think that still makes him look strong in a sense where it not necessarily takes only one person, but you need to have more than one person to kick someone's ass like that.
Yeah, and the thing about Hager too, I agree with you, Josh. That match, I knew Jack, that match with Mox a couple weeks ago, made you go, man, but he has the advantage of still being an active MMA competitor. If he beat someone in the face next month on pay-per-view, then cool. You know, there's your footage.
I mean, honestly, all it takes to really just really invigorate Jake Hager is for him to have a dominant run against, I don't know, a slew of jobbers and maybe someone at like upper mid card notable. And then that way it'll just be inflated. And then it's kind of like the Brock Lesnar syndrome. He needs to, even if he takes an L, let him run through a couple people, build him up, and then he'll be main event ready for that.
Speaking of jobbers.
The slew of jobbers. That's the name of my new stable. Slew of jobbers. So Jericho and Sammy Guevara were taking on the Young Bucks. And this was just pure fun, I thought, between the cheerleaders cheering for Sammy and Jericho pulling all the football references out, throwing flags and going for the review and the Bucks jumping off the goalposts and doing 100 yards of Northern Light suplexes. I know, Flobo, you were smiling when you saw that because your favorite move of all time is the Northern Lights.
I pop for anyone doing Northern Light suplexes. I mean, the love, well, man.
Well, that'll definitely move the chains. I also loved how Sammy Guevara woke up on a sprinkler that was spraying him. This just seems silly to me. I don't think any of these guys really needed much as far as going forward. And so they just had fun with it. Josh, was that the right call? Just have fun with it. You don't need to,
Think about it this way. If you were to have just like a serious match in like an empty stadium, it's just going to be super centered in a ring. But the fact that they let these guys have a little bit of just their personality and their characters and just to have fun with it. I mean, who in their right minds wouldn't want to run around in an empty football stadium? So I know I would. If it was just like, hey, I'll give you the keys for this, have fun. I'd be like, all right, I'm gonna run around. So why not? Let them have fun.
Yeah, so, I was
No, go ahead.
No, I was actually in watching the match in the moment. I was like, you know, this is kind of cheesy. But I thought about it. Here's the genius of AEW. If you really want to think about it, they, in past pay-per-views and past experiences, main events have been so brutal that states have been judging whether or not it should even come back. But you found a way to find a match that was extended, entertaining, and technically playing by the rules while keeping your edge. Genius.
Yeah, I thought it was really fun. And the of course, it ends with Sammy Guevara taking the one-winged angel off the top of the stadium, down through the floor. The only person that probably was more frustrated than Sammy Guevara having to take that fall was probably Darby Allin, who jumped off a high spot earlier and had everyone forget all about that after Sammy Guevara falls so far. The Elite wins here. Was that the right call? I'll let either of you take it. Do you think the good guys should have come out on top here?
I think so. I mean, this feud's been going on since last year, like around October, I'm going to say. And you always see the Inner Circle coming up at the end, you know, the bad guys with the foil and everything. But I think this time around, since the story was built great enough from the end of last year to about this year, I think it was pretty much just reasonable cause to have the good guys go over in the end. Flobo, what do you think?
Yeah, if it's the end of this, then that's the right answer. I mean, there's a little bit of a gripe in me saying, well, Sammy Guevara took the L again. It should be maybe Jericho or maybe a member of the Proud and Powerful, at least someone else, but Sammy. But no, I think we've had so many matches with this group to the point we brought in Matt Hardy now. We really got to give these guys a chance to grow on their own. If this is the end, then I'm happy with the result.
You know, you mentioned Sammy Guevara took the fall, and that sucks for him because it seems like he's always the guy. But I challenge people. You know, we keep saying that Sammy Guevara is the future, but I challenge people to watch any of the episodes or of any show for the past few weeks and tell me that Sammy Guevara isn't in a top five segment every single week for the past few months. He is absolutely killing it right now. And I was thinking, like, who came out the best in this match? Who do we look forward to the most? Who really became the star? I said it was Adam Page, but I can't help but think Sammy Guevara has just added another statement piece onto his resume. Flobo, am I mistaken?
Absolutely not. I think that, again, the middle of the road bait alert is everyone got elevated here. But yeah, if I had to pick the three stars of the match like you do in hockey, yeah, Hangman Page, Sammy Guevara, even Jake Hager, if he gave a bit of a rehab for his character, those three definitely had the most to gain last night.
How do you feel, Josh?
I definitely feel the same way. I mean, if you think about the pay-per-view overall, it not only showcased all the talent, but it showcased a lot of the younger talent. If you think about all the matches, you know there's like a majority of them with like a lot of young guys under the age of, I'm going to say, 29 or 28 or so. I mean, you got Darby Allin, you got Jungle Jack Perry, you got MJF, you got Sammy Guevara, you got Darby Allin. You have a whole slew of young guys. And the great thing about this pay-per-view was it showcased all of them so well, like throughout each and every match. So regardless if it's a win or a loss, all these young guys are going to be elevated and they're going to be the future of that company for sure.
It's crazy because you just gave me five names that are going to be stars. And somewhere else you can find five stars is if you check us out on iTunes, Spotify, and YouTube. Go ahead and leave those five stars, leave a comment, hit subscribe, and make sure to share it with your friends. It's people like you that help make us the ESPN of TV talk. Absolutely appreciate it. And I deserve an award for that transition, my friends. But we are going to
transition of the century right there, Jack. That was awesome.
We're going to go ahead and keep on rolling with more stars. Jon Moxley had a match with Brody Lee for the AEW Heavyweight Championship of the World. This, to me, felt like the biggest, most real test of Jon Moxley's reign as the AEW champion. And I think this match made Jon Moxley. In fact, I said to myself when this was done, Dean Ambrose is dead. Long live Jon Moxley. Flobo, you had some opinions about old Dean Ambrose before and now how he is as Jon Moxley. Have we officially erased Dean Ambrose from the history books here?
I did, but I did that when he paradigm shifted Kenny Omega into the pine of the canvas a couple months ago. This match here was brutal in a whole different way, and it was great. I think you're right. If you look at the guy in the ring now, he's John Moxley. Sidebar, I kind of cringe when I hear Chion Moxley, because all I can think of is Chion Cena from back in the day. But the match itself was good. Yeah, Chion. It was great, and I do think Brody Lee can hang. Again, the slight demerit, I could even say, is where does Brody Lee go from here, which we'll discuss in a second. But I think the match itself was great. There was some blood play, but not too crazy. It was befitting of what the AEW title stands for, and meaning what you have to give to either win it or defend it, or in John Moxley's case, both, because he lost the title by theft and got it back by a pinfall. So props to John on that one.
Yeah, Josh, watching this match, I saw Brody Lee, he had some new attire. I'm a big fan of the new attire. People who know me know that I take ring attire very seriously. I thought these two had great chemistry. It felt very much like a John Moxley match, John Moxley being the kind of guy that is going to always have big moments using the environment around him. Did you enjoy this match as a match? Just straight up match?
I did, yeah. And of course, just taking back some of the words that I've said in the past few weeks, I was very critical on Brody Lee taking this match, because here he comes in, not ranked whatsoever, and just already giving the main event shot already for the belt. And at first, I was just a little hesitant, but watching this match, I was just like, if this is the beginning of the feud, I'm all for it. Like, he can have that pass, bypass all the rankings and whatever the AEW is doing, and just go for the main event, because this match legitimately put both of these guys really top tier, especially John. I was going to call him John Cena, John Moxley, just up and tearing in it. And then that spot, with the paradigm shift into the stage. Oh my goodness, made me think of Taz versus Bam Bam Bigelow Heatwave ECW in 98.
Whoa, that's a deep cut, bro.
Yes. Getting it in there.
Yes. Yo, Fox.
Heatwave, low key, one of my favorite wrestling pay per views, by the way. I agree. Him going through the floor, I popped. I don't know if I'm supposed to be saying these kind of terms. I popped. I was like, hey, that was so cool. I love when people go through the floor. They could do it every show, and every time I'd go, hey.
So just for the record, Jack popped the biggest move ever, but I'm like, north of my suplex. Wow.
It explains our personal preferences on wrestlers as well. But right. Something that happened, I was thinking about this. I guess one, before we get into John Moxley winning, Brody Lee, he takes the paradigm shift through the floor. He gets up. He takes another paradigm shift, kicks out at one, takes another paradigm shift, counts out at two, or kicks out at two. Three paradigm shifts didn't put him away. It wasn't enough to win the match, though. Flobo, does because he went through so much, does Brody Lee keep his big, scary, unbeatable monster status, or did this set him back?
I would say if he had lost by pinfall, but the way that Brody Lee tapped out, I'm starting to question that. And maybe that may be a storyline beat. Maybe it might
he
be a rebirth.
Out, by the way.
Oh, sorry, it's pass out, right. Tap, he napped, it's he didn't tap, he napped.
It's important.
It's important. It's important. No, you're right. I stand corrected. But what I'm saying is, seeing that happen, you have to give me a storyline reason to think he's as scary as he was before. Maybe the Dark Order can have a remix or something, or a reincarnation or something. As it is right now, yeah. Sorry, DJ mode. As it is right now, I'm not as afraid of Brody Lee seeing John Moxley just straight, you know, do one of those things for him. So
what is next for the Dark Order? Because something I'm kind of thinking might happen is, if I'm Evil Uno and I'm Stu Grayson sitting at home, I'm thinking to myself, you kind of kicked us out. You acted like you knew what you were doing. You came in like the big boss, and you just got choked out. Josh Alonso, do we need to see some dissension in the ranks here in the Dark Order, or are they yesterday's news?
I think give it a few more weeks or maybe a couple more months, and then we can start talking Dark Order, Hollywood and Dark Order Wolfpack, and then that's where we can go and just like say, all right, let's pick our sides, guys.
Always go Team Hollywood. Now, Flobo, I want to ask you, because you're a story guy. You appreciate good storytelling. As they were building up to Moxley versus Hager, they talked all about John Moxley's MMA training. And here he is, retaining with a chokeout. Is this them paying off a little bit of a a storyline here, or am I just digging too far into it?
Absolutely. If you're thinking about the growth of Jon Moxley, the AEW champion, every single match, every single promo is built onto him. I would say Jon Moxley is the best written, not booked, written champion in North American professional wrestling far and away. The thing is, when you're someone that strong, you have to give talent that can go with them. So you look at who's available, and you say Brody Lee, which is a good choice on paper. Brody Lee is still so new, I worry about him. So Jon Moxley's great. MMA training, he could probably work a gun if you gave it to him. My concern is my man Brody. What happens next for him?
Well, let me follow up on that then, because you say he's the best written character in all of North American pro wrestling. Yeah. I know he's still in the middle of it, but how do you compare his reign to Jericho's? I know they only got two options, but if you had to rank all AEW world champions, how would you rank them?
I think that the appeal of Jericho was that he was someone that was still a living, even though he was older, even though it was an older version of Jericho, this was the guy that was in that promotion 10 years ago, that other promotion 20 years ago, the man in Japan, the rock star, the actor, the guy that kind of looks like Gordon Ramsay on my TV screen. That's a whole different thing. But his week-to-week promos were just him establishing and reestablishing that I was the painmaker. Whereas with Jon Moxley, it's a very basic premise. People's champion AEW walking through the crowd, but you have to tell the fans not only why you deserve to be champion, why you are a little bit crazy and off the wall, but why you're also not Dean Ambrose in the open promotion. And I think that was a nuance in his character that made it stand out a little bit more.
So we see who the next challenger already is going to be for Jon Moxley. He's going to be facing the man they call Brian Cage. He's a machine. I loved Brian Cage in Lucha Underground. He totally won me over back then. Also been tearing it up at Impact Wrestling. Josh Alonso, I got to ask you, there's been a slew of signings over the past few months for AEW. Is Brian Cage the biggest signing that AEW has gotten yet?
I think so far, yes, because if you take a look at Brian Cage's resume, it is phenomenal. Not only a former world champion and X-Division champion over at Impact, but he's done a slew of different things all over the world, including PWG. I believe he did not New Japan, but he did some Japanese promotion over there, and his work speaks for itself. And then pairing him with Taz, just perfect right there, because you have a former machine like Taz, and then you have a new breed of machine like Brian Cage. That is just a pairing that is so perfect. And then, of course, as we saw in the end story of the ladder match, we saw a little bit of just like Taz telling, like giving Darby Allin the message, just like, hey, you picked that losing side. Now I got my guy. Now we're going for the championship. Now your loss.
Yeah, with Cage, it's interesting. He came out, and I thought he handled himself so well in showing us his move set. If you've never seen him before, you got to see some of his cool moves, like the – I can't remember what he calls it. I call it the Steiner screwdriver, the vertical suplex into a pile driver. Brutal. Power bombing Luchasaurus onto the table or the ladder. The fact that they literally buried him mid-match and he just powered out of it. And I can tell you right now, I don't know what's going to happen, but I will part with money to see Darby Allin versus Brian Cage in the future. I got to ask Flobo, though, you are the resident expert on WWE Raw. You're the host of the after show for AfterBuzz TV here. Taz, Brian Cage, does this feel a little bit like Brock and Paul Heyman, or is that just internet tweet warriors trying to take hot takes?
There is that on paper. Let's get the person who's affiliated with Extreme Brand, with someone who's just a massive, but it's two different interpretations. What made Paul so savvy was that he had more of the businessman aspect. He could talk you under the table, but he looked like a guy that had a nice suit that can cut the deals, get Brock the money, so he comes in ever so often. Whereas Taz, he can't manage them, but the implication is that I'm learning from somebody else who can damage you with suplexes and technical wrestling. It's very easy to look at Brian Cage and say, okay, you mound of muscle, you could probably slam around, but are you good? And you have someone in Taz that goes, hey, look, 3 weeks ago, I had a whole segment of how to hurt people. I'm working with you. So I'm here with it. And I was a fan of Brian Cage back in the day. I was in the professional wrestling circuit with him in SoCal, and it's cool to see him blow up. And now I'm arguably one of the bigger wrestling promotions in the country.
Seeing that guy, it's hard to believe he's that ripped and he just had surgery a few months ago. Like, how unfair is that, man? I work so hard. I don't work nearly hard enough, but I worry. I'm trying to lose a couple pounds. This guy's getting cut open and still just getting gains. This was an interesting ladder match. They did something different. They had the countdown timer before people came into this match. Now, forget about my first question was, can they win before everyone's even in there? I don't think that's one of those things that's going to come up, so it doesn't really matter. Josh, in general, did you like the countdown timer aspect to this type of ladder match?
I did actually like that concept, because normally when you have ladder matches and you have multi-person ladder matches, it's always just a cluster of just like who to keep up with what. But then having, starting off with two, then eventually a triple threat, then fatal four-way, and then, you know, fatal five-way, if we want to call it, and then the fatal six-way, or forget the other technical term for it, but just going on six-pack challenge, thank you very much. And I like the progression of just having just each of the competitors coming out one by one and just giving them their spots and then just working within the area of it, because if it was just all nine guys at once, I don't think it would have been as great of a match. But then the way it was set up and everything, I thought the match was great.
It's funny how a timer makes people coming out seem so much more interesting. I feel like if they had a timer just before the start of a match, it would make me so hyped. Even if it was like, it's time for the next match. 5, 4. You'd be like, what match is coming up? I'm so excited. It's such a great little workaround there. Now, lots of cool stars in here that I don't think we saw as necessarily winning this match, but still fun to see. I think Kip Sabian with Jimmy Havoc and Penelope Ford looked like a fun group. I really enjoy them. SCU, I've always said Scorpio Sky has world title written all over him. But Flobo, I want to ask you about a guy who was added to the match last minute because Rey Fénix was injured on Dynamite, I believe, and Joey Janela took his place. Now, you and I were texting back and forth, as we do, we chat. Yeah. You are a huge fan of Joey Janela. How do you think he handled himself in this match?
In the match, he was great. A-okay, man. And I was texting you this also. He reminds me so much of WWE's Apollo in that I am with people. I usually go, yo, man, Janela, he is dope. And they turn on the TV and they go, that guy? I'm like, no, you got to see it. I always did the running joke we have in the Raw show is like, that, like the frog in the cartoons, you know? It's always, when I'm looking at the frog, it doesn't sing, but when you turn around, it's like, hello, my baby, hello, my honey. Janela's great. And he's actually one of the few guys.
I love that reference. I love that
analogy. It's true. My favorite. Janela's great. And I can tell you all these independent matches you can go on YouTube and Google and stuff like that. But as we always say, you got to get dubs. And when he's appeared sporadically in AEW, he doesn't get the win. When he comes out, there is a bit of like a longing for a mystique. Why should I care about the bad boy? You can't call yourself the bad boy if you ain't that bad.
Well, maybe he's just not that good.
Or he's just bad at winning.
I'm just joking. I've said I like Joey. I like Joey Janela. I think he should be in a tag team because I think he could make someone who needs some character pop a little bit more. But I want to talk about a guy who's got character. I want to talk about a guy who has been blowing our minds for a long time, Darby Allin. A lot of people expected him to win this match, I think, outside of maybe mystery competitor who always usually comes out on top in these kind of things. But Darby Allin, one of the biggest spots of the night, skateboarding off the very tippity top of that ladder. And when I say top, I mean the tippity top. People, not like where they got like the back of their knees against the top. I mean, he was on the top, and he skateboards down, and it doesn't work out for him. Now, I think even though he lost, this still came off great, because I'd still love to see Darby versus Mox. I'd still love to see Darby versus Cage. I think Darby proved he'd be great against anybody, but him not winning, Josh, was this a missed opportunity on AEW's part?
I don't think so. Like what I stated earlier about this being a showcase for all the younger talent, they still got a lot of time with Darby Allin. I mean, he is such a character. Although he doesn't speak, there's a lot of people that relate to him because he is the introvert. Mm-hmm. He is the outsider. He is the punk rocker, whatever you want to call him and everything. So he definitely has that mystique, sort of similar to what Jeff Hardy had, where we rooted for the guy. We rooted for the guy that was definitely a daredevil. And, you know, eventually he will have his day where he is going to become a champion, but that's going to be further down the line. So this loss definitely does not affect him whatsoever.
Someone else who didn't really get affected by the loss, I think, is the show stealer himself, Orange Cassidy. Comes out, everything he does He just steals the show. He's funny. He finds a way to become believable. I think when he jumped on Cage's back, I almost lost it. I was like, he's going to win, and it's going to be totally believable the way he pulls this off. Lobo is – could we take him seriously as a world title contender? I feel like it's almost time.
Oh, man, I'm torn, man. I get
hot take, all or nothing.
He all or nothing. No. Oh. If we're putting a hot take, the answer is no. And the answer is no because he has to know how a ladder works, first of all. Like, that to me is nothing wrong with the bullet. No, I think there's a room for comedy and wrestling. And we just talked at the singing praise of Ortiz, and we saw a stadium stampede match with a bunch of people that could be the world champion. But what Orange Cassidy does is a nice, refreshing thing you put right before intermission, something to put smiles on face and sending people home. He can be aggressive, I mean, if he wants to, but you can't have the guy win a world championship without putting his hands out of his pockets. I mean, what kind of message does that send about your level of competition?
Well, you know, speaking of the world title, I want to really quickly get your quick, way too early predictions. Cage won the match, so he's going to face Jon Moxley at Fyter Fest. They've already mentioned, said when and where. Real quick, again, we're running out of time. Who wins that match, Cage or Moxley? Is this Moxley's last stand, or is he going to retain against the Machine?
Cage has to win.
Yeah.
Cage has to win. And the thing is, I would say, oh, no, they're just feeding it to Moxley. But we saw that women's title match yesterday, and I had it pegged that Nyla was going to retain, and it didn't happen. So I got to say, man, anything can happen in AEW. They want a predictable title change. Jon Moxley's a people's champ. He doesn't need it necessarily. And near Brian Cage being this beast on top of the mountain, that's my pick, Brian Cage.
Rose and Sheeta are coming up next, but doesn't that become too predictable real quick? I mean, Jericho, who's the champion, and the new guy that was signed in the second defense is the one that takes the title. This would be the new guy that signed taking the title. Is that kind of the exact same thing that happened to Jericho?
If you could sit back, if you're asking me, Brian, you can sit back and argue that till you're blue in the face, but that's how MMA works a lot of times too. And I think AEW is going for that kind of unpredictability. So you may say, okay, yeah, the last three guys, that's a pattern, but I think it's trying to say, hey, look, any given night, anyone is good enough to take you down.
That's how MMA works. You hear that, Mox? You live by the sword, you die by the sword. We have Nyla Rose taking on Hikaru Shida for the Women's Championship. And I'm going to say it now. This is the match that will define the AEW Women's Division for years to come. Right from the start, very physical, very hard-hitting. Josh, I'm going to jump right in with this. Was this Nyla Rose's best match?
Possibly, maybe, because we see a stylistic difference between two of the competitors right here. We have Nyla Rose, who is very just like the power-driven, just dominating type of force. And we got Hikaru Shida, who is more or less the finesse type and has her striking abilities and everything. And one of the biggest critiques AEW has had is that their women's division hasn't been highlighted or it's not that strong. But as we saw within the past month or just the past few weeks, it's been really building up. And I think this is pretty much just like, hey, the women are here, and they're here to kick some ass. And this match was so phenomenal. From the beginning of Nyla just dominating until the very end, where just Hikaru Shida was just pretty much having her comeback and everything. This was just pretty much a great match overall.
Yeah, the title looks so good on Shida. I thought her outfit looked cool. I don't know if it's a tribute to someone. It was different than what she usually wears. But I thought it was a cool pay-per-view setup. I think, like I said, the title looks good. And I mean, she's been the heart and soul of the women's division for a long, long time. And I think she deserves this win. I think she is great as champion. I think this is a new era for her. I think it's a new era for the women's division in AEW. And I think that any argument that the AEW women's division isn't set anymore is completely outdated. Flobo, is that true or false? Am I crazy?
You said a lot of things. I think the critique is wrong now. I do think the critique is wrong. It was weird because when Nyla Rose won the title, we called that the new era. So now we're in a third era. But I really think the match tonight. I didn't like how it finished, specifically the pinfall. But what I liked about the match is before the match even started, you had a car shooter come out with your music, different posturing, understanding how important this is. We sit there on Monday and Wednesday nights on the after shows of Raw and NXT. Hands out, mouth agape, How do you build new stars? Well, that's how you do it. You have a talent go out there and go on a winning streak, beating people from different styles and sizes and shape, and say, hey, look, she may have a shot against someone who literally calls herself a beast. It could have gone either way. And on Thursday, as late as Thursday, I would have put money that Rose is going to retain, and she did it, which I thought was pretty amazing. So we're asking, what does AEW women's division look like? Well, it's fighting spirit, right? It's really how far can you be pushed until someone gets a pinfall or a tap or a snap or going beyond the pales might be AEW's calling card.
Mm-hmm. This, I love that you say that, the fighting spirit. I think they would agree that is a perfect analogy for what that division brings. And I think this really sets a tone for them. Another division that had its tone set last night was the TNT Championship. Now, real quick, Flobo, you and I, we chat about titles and designs all the time. What are your thoughts on this belt design? Now, it's not finished. They say they're going to add some gold to it. Do you like the title and how it looks? One, and two, if it wasn't finished, should they have not shown it?
Okay, the answer is no. Now, I know there was some gold plating or whatever, and I'm not saying every title should be the same because, again, WWE, as a comparison, you have a flag belt on Monday nights and a gold and copper bronze Intercontinental Championship on Friday nights. But I almost felt like there was a theme throughout all the belts at AEW that it was almost like an oblong or rectangular vibe. Things kind of have the flare on both sides pretty even. This one seems like it was like barred from almost a New Japan US title, and it had their TNT stamp on it, straight logo. The core design looks pretty amateur, but I can't roast it because it's unfinished. The answer is you withhold it. If it's not done and you want to blame the virus, that's fine. You can say you win it later. It happens all the time in sports. You win the championship, you get your ring 6 months later. It's not a problem. I wouldn't have shown it.
I think that's a fair point. I think they could have made it a big deal on another Dynamite as well and said, hey, the unveiling ceremony happens this week or whatever. You can even have something fun where Cody loses before he gets the actual title and he becomes a guy who never has the chance to hold the title. Could have been a fun little thing there, but I'm sure they've got something planned out already. Josh, I want to ask you, everyone's going to throw their hands up and say, Cody was just trying to become a champion now that he can't become the world title. You know what? I'm going to lead by saying, I think he deserves it. He's been the heart and soul of the people since the beginning of this thing. I think he deserved it. Do you think he deserved it? And do you think Archer came out looking okay in the loss?
Overall, this match was competitive, win or loss. I think Archer comes out strong here because it wasn't a simple victory for Cody. And I think it's well-deserved for him. And I think Cody having the TNT belt is great because he gets to highlight not only the championship, but he gets to highlight other guys within that division as well, because the main event's already set. We needed someone to have control of the mid-card. And then with Cody being a superstar that he is with the mid-belt, with the mid-card title, I think this really is a great time to elevate a lot of the guys that we don't see, or maybe a lot of the times we're on AEW Dark. That would be a great place to defend that belt. It just really elevate a lot of the guys within that corner, because it reminds me of what John Cena did with the U.S. title, with the U.S. title open and everything like that. It's a great way to have all these talent just to really just present themselves to a more mainstream audience that a lot of people are not familiar with. So Cody with the belt, good decision overall. The belt itself, not the greatest looking thing in the world.
Tyson, I don't know. I felt like they didn't get to use him quite the way they wanted to. He just sort of chased off the managers, but we're low on time. So I'm going to keep on rolling if that's okay with everybody. We had a match, MJF versus Jungle Boy, and going into this match, look, I thought this was going to be filler. I thought this was going to be like an interlude kind of match. I dare say they damn near went for match of the night. For two guys who are kind of character-driven guys, they really put on a wrestling show, working the arm. Jungle Boy's comeback was fantastic. And the pinning series at the end, I had to take a note of, I thought was really, really cool. Bobo, boys, what's next for these two?
Yeah, that was actually my questions. What's next for both of them? MJF was the talk of the town. He was going to be the guy who's going to threaten for the world championship. Looks like that's not going to happen. He has to be there, whether or not he's in the front row buying a ticket or the next in line after someone else does it. But if Cage wins it, then I'm not sure that's going to work. But Jungle Boy has to be elevated. I'm not saying he has to go right there for the world title defense. Or maybe he's perfect for the TNT championship if we're doing it. But you can't put someone out there and being the workhorse and not award that the way he's been giving out consistently good matches with our high octane, have good energy, make you feel at a character level and technical as well, defying what a boy can do.
I predict MJF is going to be the first challenger for that TNT title. I think they're going to renew that rivalry going after this. But Josh, I want to ask you about Jungle Boy. Can they elevate it? I think we all agree. We got to elevate him. We got to move him on. Can we elevate him and still have him be just Jungle Boy from Jungle Express? Or is that too kind of childish? Does he need to become Jack Perry as JR seems to not want to let go of?
I think it's a character change. If you really want to elevate him to a main event star, you got to change. You have to have a character change. I don't know if you remember this, Jack, but a few months ago, you, myself, and Roger were talking about this. I think if you were to put him as a heel and call him Hollywood Jack Perry, I think that would be phenomenal for him. Because if he takes that background of what he has, obviously we all know who his father was, and then just really up that right there. And all he has to do is pretty much just like yoke up just a little bit more, just add a few pounds of muscle to him, and he's going to be a credible threat. It's just pretty much a character change here. We know he's athletic. That's not a problem. But I think more than anything, we're just so accustomed as wrestling fans, we need to believe the character in itself. If the character is not there, we're not going to believe him as a main eventer. But if the character change is good, most likely a heel, then he'll be ready for that.
Poor Jack Perry. The guy's in such good shape, and we all say he's got to get more muscle. Poor guy. I mean, how unfair is it? If I was built like Jack Perry, I would be stoked if someone told me to bulk up when I was shredded
there with
like
your like long hair in the mirror. Just like...
speaking of looking shredded, we had Penelope Ford versus Chris Statlander. Now Britt Baker got hurt, so Penelope Ford filled in for her. I thought both these two did a great job. I thought Penelope Ford has been like the Swiss Army knife of AEW in a lot of ways. She's been getting involved in men's matches, women's matches, doing all sorts of stuff. I see both of these two as sort of the backbone of the women's division right now. Do you guys, Flobo, any thoughts on these two off the top?
I think Swiss Army Knife is perfect. It's like the opposite of a workhorse. The workhorse tends to win, or at least have the most challenging matches. But like Penelope Ford is someone you go, okay, she's going to give me a good time, but not really a credible threat. She needs wins on her own against really strong competition. I don't know if you're going to bring in like Allie Kay or any one of those girls as well. But I really think of that faction between her and Kip, she could be the one that would be the attraction if given the space to do so.
Yeah. Real quick, again, because we're low on time here. Spears lost to Rhodes. Josh, this was fun and silly. Kind of feels like Sean Spears is over, though, and not in the wrestling term kind of way. Are they just – is he kind of just done, or are they just using him to fill time? What's going on with Sean Spears?
It's such a shame what they're doing to Sean Spears. I mean, you take a guy who many of us could agree was underutilized in the WWE as Ty Dillinger. We knew that he's talented. We knew that he's a phenomenal wrestler. It's just unfortunate now they're kind of doing the same old thing here in AEW. I think – I really don't know the solution for Sean Spears. I mean, we saw him literally get beat in his underwear by Dustin Rhodes, which is not a problem because Dustin Rhodes is a phenomenal wrestler, but this is kind of just like a throwaway feud. This was really nothing that Sean Spears could have walked away looking better. If he lost, which he did, doesn't make him look better. If he won, so what? So at this point, Sean Spears is kind of dead in the water unless they revive his character somehow.
Yeah, it's strange. Real quick, before in the buy-in, we had Private Party versus Best Friends, number one contender on the line for the tag team titles. Private Party, I feel like I haven't seen Private Party in years. And unfortunately, I love them, but I feel like they lost a lot of momentum coming back. Flobo, do you see them in title contention? I mean, they lost, so they're not. But like, do they have a lot of work to get back and going again?
Before the crowds were all dispersed, my problem with them is they're not considered serious. You can have the party boy theme, but I'm not going to take you seriously if you're billed at 40 ounces of vodka or cranberry or what have you. They can get the momentum back because it's just that good. The talent will always win the day. But yeah, you got to come to work. You got to come to work so people see you, they can buy your shirt and chant for you. And so people know about that. And I think that's what I'm looking for.
Yeah, and of course, Best Friends win. I think Best Friends should have won because they've been the workhorses of this pre-taped era, so to speak. Trent, to me, always stands out like a star. Now they're going to go up against the tag team champions, Hangman and Omega. but it feels like they've already got a bunch of rivalries brewing. They're kind of feuding with Kip and Havoc. They're kind of feuding with the Death Triangle as well. Josh, would you rather see them continue those feuds as champions, or do you think they don't need the championships because they've got these built-in rivalries ready to go?
I don't think they need the championships because they already have a great feud going on with Kip Sabian and Jimmy Havoc, and I think that would be a phenomenal match in itself right there, because you could see a traditional wrestling match at one point, and then, of course, with Jimmy Havoc, you can totally see a hardcore death match type of situation. So I think what will happen is best friends are going to challenge for the titles, and then Kip Sabian and Jimmy Havoc come out, ruin it, and then that's where we see that extension of that feud, and then Omega and Hangman Page go on to something else.
And so Flobo, do you agree? Do you think? Because you just mentioned how do you elevate people, right?
Right.
And when you just said the way you elevate people is you have them win a championship. It feels like right now the best friends are ready as ever to be elevated. Does that mean it's time to take the titles away from two guys who could be world champions?
Sure. I was swayed by what Josh said, because I was going to say, well, yeah, you give the titles to best friends because they have three built-in feuds. And there you go. You have storylines built in. Kenny Omega doesn't have to be in this division. Neither does Hangman Page. Everybody wins. But you're right. If you want entertaining storylines, you don't necessarily have to have the titles on them, because now you can have two sets of tag team storylines on the same show. Novel concept. What's wrong with that?
Yeah, it's funny. We always talk about how we want these mid-card situations to happen in different divisions, and here AEW is giving it to us. But it's also good. I think they're getting this title shot. I, for one, don't want to see Hangman Adam Page and Kenny Omega break up anytime soon. I feel like they're just getting started. It's almost – it reminds me of NXT with the Broserweights a little bit, and how they were sort of an odd couple. I loved the moment of Hangman and Kenny – pouring each other a drink at the bar, and one was milk and one was some kind of booze. I don't know what it was. Flobo, do you want to see that team continue, or do you want to see them just get to the point and see this team implode?
I think Kenny Omega is a perfect foil for Hangman Page, which is funny because I think you say the opposite. But I want more Hangman. I want more Hangman. I think Kenny Omega is a perfect, like, chill out Uncle Hangman, you know? So, yeah, more of them, I'm all for it.
So that's kind of all the matches that went down at the show. Overall, based on all the other shows we've seen during this empty arena, where do you guys, Josh, we'll start with you. Where do you rank it? Would you say that this was, like, I'll spoil it. I think it was the best. I was excited the whole time. I forgot there wasn't a crowd. I think they nailed it perfectly. But Josh, am I crazy? Am I losing it? Am I nuts?
You would be crazy if you would think that this is not a great show, because the thing that AEW does best is they don't have pay-per-views going month to month to month. They have these pay-per-views spread out sporadically, and so you see a lot of these stories grow progressively naturally, which is great because you get to really invest your time into each of these storylines, into each of these characters, and I think that's really what the key was, that we need time for everything to soil in. It's like when you're marinating a piece of steak or a piece of chicken, you really got to get those flavors in it to really appreciate that taste, and that's what that taste was yesterday, but overall, great show.
3-day weekend barbecue over at Josh's place, by the way.
Got it.
Flobo, I know your heart is with the WWE, but how do you think old AEW stood up this weekend?
I can't believe I'm saying this, because this is going to sound weird saying it out of my mouth, but when it comes down to atmosphere, Double or Nothing was bigger than WrestleMania. WrestleMania was two nights. What? Maybe it was the open air arena. Maybe it was the crowd and piped in crowd noises. Maybe it was committing to the theme fully with the stuff in the crowd. And the matches were great. Granted, you can't do Cody Dustin 2. A year has passed. What we got instead is something that's completely unique and perfect for this time. So as a pay-per-view, as a show, as a promotion, all successes across the board.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's funny. I was chatting to some of my smart and cool friends about what they thought of the show, and we all seemed to agree there was a combination of the production, the props, and all the stories just contributed to this atmosphere that really made everything feel special. And it's, I think a lot of it has to go to just the planning and everything they did to get here. I give it a Jack Farmer official 17 stars. Out of who knows? I don't know. You got to keep watching and do the math, I guess. I don't know. I make it up. Who cares? It's stars. It's made up. Just enjoy it. overall, it was a great show. I appreciate everyone, as always, for joining us. I think that'll do it for us. Josh, why don't you do the world a favor and tell them where they can find you online and all that good stuff.
Of course, you guys can find me at all the social media platforms at JOAL323. And before we go, quick shout out to people in the chat. We got SwitchFan94. We got Emma Rose. We got Eric Clark. We got Haywood Wong. We got Charlene. We got Anissa Barr in the chat. We also have Mike and Zeno Hour, and we also have all the usual suspects, including Joseph Boza as well. So thank you guys so much for checking us out. Hope you guys have a great night.
Yeah, you guys who are here with us live, it's always such a treat to have you, and it's always something that I like to go back and look at the chat and see what everyone's chatting about. I get distracted. It's hard for me to type and talk at the same time. Most people, I can't do this number very well. But so we appreciate you being here. Flobo, where can they find you online?
Hey, you can find me on Twitter at FloboBoys, on Instagram at Flobito, and of course, Flobito.com. But every Monday night and Wednesday night, After Buzz TV Wrestling and Sports, the Raw after show, the NXT after show, this guy is on your screen.
And of course, I am your host. You can find me, Jack Farmer, at JackCFarmer.com, as well as at Real Jack Farmer across all social media. You can also check me out on the After Buzz WWE Raw after show every Monday at 9:15 Pacific Standard Time, as well as the AEW Dynamite after show every Wednesday at 8:15 Pacific Standard Time, as well as Jack and Flobo wrestle with your questions. It's a Thursday special where we answer any old random crazy question you guys throw at us. Also, you can check me out playing with Smart Button at smartbutton.com. Get yours today. It is a treat, so treat yourself and get one. I think that'll do it from all of us. And until next time, as always, folks, do your best and be yourself.
Our founder, Kevin Undergaro, and me, Maria Menounos, would like to thank you for tuning in to AfterBuzz TV. Remember, we're not just the first, we're the biggest in the world, and we're the only destination for all your favorite TV shows. Whatever you crave, we've got it. So go to AfterBuzzTV.com and check out our lineup. Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.